as the silent seconds dance in their eternity about me, and set aflame again the fire to inspire my nimble fingers to procure the pen and awaken it in a resurrection, transforming the ink to the blood of the writer. As once again he bleeds his acquired wisdom like a light into the world.
Good morning, Carborough and Chapel Hill. This is Claudio's Speakeasy, the literary and all else. I'm John Paul McClellan, Claudio's co-host. Claudio's been under the weather and tied up with various and sundry activities that have prevented him from coming in recently. So today I have taken up the torch and I'm filling in for Claudio and wishing him the best, hoping that he gets to feeling much better and gets his time situation straightened out where he can come back in and spend some time with us. So, and that's going to happen, by the way, next week on Tuesday. We are going to do another Claudio Speakeasy show with Claudio Oswald Niedvarock and me, John Paul McClellan. We'll have a guest by the name of Veda, who is a multifunctional artist, performing arts, visual arts, does lots of really interesting stuff. And then on April 15th, we'll have Peggy Taphorn back from the Temple Theater in Sanford, where she will be, where she's the artistic producing director. And she'll be back to talk with us about what's going on these days with her at the Temple Theater. What I'm going to do today, by the way, I'm sorry, let me interrupt myself. That piece of music and poetry that you heard on the show opener, which is what I always play as the show opens, is a poem that was written by Claudio, and the musical accompaniment is my composition and performance. Claudio and I have done lots of performance art over the last 10 years or so, and that's one of the pieces that we recorded some time ago in my studio. I was also the producer, and we've had tons and tons of fun doing performance art in that style, with Claudio reciting and me playing musical illustration, as I call it. So I hope you enjoyed that. Now, what I'm going to do today is look at my collection of things from the web, things that are that deal with what our government is doing, what really is happening. You know, I try to find the truth about what's really happening in the world and with our government and talk about it. So one of the things I'm going to do today is I've got my computer hooked up to the board so we can hear stuff through my computer, and I'm going to go look at some various things and just share them with you, look through my long list of bookmarks and try to pull things up and talk about them as we go. And I might try to do some call-ins, that is, for people to call the show in and talk to me on the air. I haven't actually ever done that before, so I think it'll be interesting to see how that works out. The number is 919-929-9601, and I welcome calls from anyone. I'm not going to screen the calls. I'm going to take the calls live on the air. So anybody who wants to call and talk to me, have at it. See if you can call me And it'd be interesting to see if anybody's actually listening. It would be fun to talk with somebody on the air. So let me jump into the beginning of what I intend to go over today. One of the things that most people don't understand, although a lot more people nowadays do understand than used to, because there's been a very substantial movement about getting out the truth about the reality of how our government actually operates, as opposed to the lies that they tell us all the time about how they operate. We basically have, at this point, a fascist government. And just because you're not being hauled away to a concentration camp doesn't mean that we don't have a fascist government. We do. A fascist government is basically defined as a government that is basically controlled by the corporations. And that's what we have in our country at this point. And it's been going on for a very long time. The imperialistic movement at the head of our nation has really been going on at least since 1845, when the government told its people the lie that some Mexican troops had crossed into U.S. territory and attacked some U.S. troops. That didn't happen. It was a complete fabrication. It was a pretext that was used by the government at the time to attack Texas, Arizona, New Mexico, California, Utah, Oregon, Nevada, and maybe some other states that at that time weren't states. That's how we acquired those states, by lying about the need to go to war with Mexico. And the president at the time went before Congress and lied his butt off in front of Congress because he was interested in territorial expansion. There was no breach of our border. It was a complete and utter fabrication. Many such things continue to happen these days, and they've happened all the way up and down the pages of history. Most of the stuff that we are taught when we're in school as grammar school students or juniors or high school students or middle school students is complete and utter baloney. Another example is the Gulf of Tonkin incident that was used to justify sending hundreds of thousands of our precious military people into Vietnam to their deaths for absolutely no reason. Their lives were completely wasted through no fault of their own, but our government was responsible for that. Who benefited? The large corporations, the military-industrial complex, and the politicians who beat the war drums. They're the ones who benefited. Who lost? The American people, the U.S. Treasury, the families of the 58,000 U.S. military people who were killed needlessly. Horrific war crimes. Just the faking of an incident to go to war is a crime. So, and Lyndon Johnson knew that there was no Gulf of Tonkin incident. So he was the main perpetrator, I believe, of that incident. So moving along, what I'm looking at now is a website from Global Research, which is the Center for Research on Globalization. It's on the web at www.globalresearch.ca. And the piece I'm looking at now is called Unraveling the Myth of Al-Qaeda. It is written by Peter Chamberlain, who is a research fellow. The first part of it reads like this. The myth of Al-Qaeda is built on an expansive foundation of many half-truths and hidden facts. It is a CIA creation. It was shaped by the agency to serve as a substitute enemy for America, replacing the Soviets, whom the Islamic forces had driven from Afghanistan. Unknown American officials, at an indeterminate point in time, made the decision to fabricate the tale of a mythical worldwide network of Islamic terrorists from the exploits of the African Mujahideen. The CIA already had their own network of Islamic militant freedom fighters, in quotes. All that was needed were a few scattered terrorist attacks against U.S. targets and a credible heroic figurehead to serve as the great leader. This article then goes on to talk about the details of how this was all done. Quoting again, "The really tricky part of creating a mythical terrorist monster out of an incomplete truth is laying out the facts behind your mythical story without revealing the whole truth about your part in its creation. In order to explain away the billions of dollars worth of weapons and training that went into the operation, they chose a rich jihadi, a Saudi millionaire named Osama bin Laden, who had been a faithful recruiter and business agent of the Mujahideen. He was painted as the sole financier of the entire enormous operation that was centered in Pakistan and Afghanistan. Bin Laden may not even have known that he was playing a part in a deceitful CIA global drama until after the fact. It is more likely that his history was chosen many years later to serve as the legacy of Al-Qaeda than it is that he was brainwashed. He was a brainwashed tool of the spy agency, all ongoing. The story of bin Laden is the story of the secret CIA, ISI, insurgent camps in Pakistan and Afghanistan." The ISI, by the way, is Pakistan's version of the CIA. According to Professor Michael Chasadowski, Osama was 22 years old in 1979 when he was trained in a CIA-sponsored guerrilla training camp near Peshawar, Pakistan. Quote, "Bin Laden family was put in charge of raising money for the Islamic brigades. Numerous charities and foundations were created. The operation was coordinated by Saudi intelligence, headed by Prince Turki al-Faisal, in close liaison with the CIA. The money derived from the various charities was used to finance the recruitment of Mujahideen volunteers. Al-Qaeda, the base in Arabic, was a databank of volunteers who had enlisted to fight in the Afghan jihad. That database was initially held by Osama bin Laden." End quote. Now, researcher Kurt Nemo writes, "The database of Islamic fighters that was collected by the program was labeled in Arabic, K'ajatat il-Mutayyit, which is the exact translation of the English word database." How about that? "But the Arabs commonly used the short word Al-Qaeda, which is the Arabic word for base. In 1989, the U.S. under George Bush Sr. moved to abandon Afghanistan, making preparations to attack Saddam Hussein long before he had ever moved against Kuwait in 1991. As far as Bush knew, the spy agency had obeyed his orders to abandon the Afghan tribal bloodbath and civil war. But the CIA knew better than the commander-in-chief. This fit in well with a deceitful Secretary of Defense, who had also believed that he knew better than his boss, as evidenced by Cheney ordering his underling, Paul Wolfowitz, to draw up an alternative foreign policy known as the Defense Planning Guideline. The covert foreign policy of Reagan and Carter had become ever more secret as control of the camp network was submerged even deeper into the bowels of the secret world of the CIA. The CIA did not pull out of the jihad program after the Soviet withdrawal, leaving it solely in the hands of ISI hands. There is a massive trial massive trail of evidence which proves that all the Islamist extremists who were trained under this program to undermine Kashmir, Bosnia, Chechnya, Kosovo, Egypt, the U.S., and England were not all Pakistan's doing. This has always been a CIA program. The attempt to pretend that we were washing our hands of it was to give plausible deniability to the President of the United States that he had ordered an end to that effort. CIA appeared to comply as they covertly ignored the position of their old boss and set their own foreign policy. The ensuing Kashmiri conflict started in 1989 by American and Pakistani trained sources was an act of war against India, which part of the executive branch was responsible for the new plan. Basically, they're saying whose presidential decision was this? Or was it a rogue? I mean, was this a presidential decision? Not whose was it? Or was it a rogue agency that decided on its own to turn the Islamists against us, manipulating the Islamists into openly killing 3,000 Americans on 9/11? Whose plan were the Islamists and the covert planters of explosive executing on that new day of infamy? Pakistanis seethed with anger at the U.S. for abandoning them in the mess we had made. They were only doing what America had demanded of them. So, in other words, Al-Qaeda is a creation of the United States through Pakistan's ISI. The United States basically recruited Osama bin Laden as an undercover asset. We funded huge amounts of warfighting materials to the Afghanistan freedom fighters, which is what we called them back then when we thought they were wonderful people because they were doing what we wanted them to do. And that's how they defeated the Soviets. In fact, the U.S. drew the Soviets into Afghanistan with the creation of the Mujahideen. They put the whole program together, and this group was, what they were doing originally was attacking the government in Afghanistan because that government was not Islamic. And the U.S. We were the ones behind the funding and the provisions for that organization. And of course, in the interim, between the time that they started the war and the Soviets came in and the Soviets were defeated, we were the ones that were supplying these huge billions and billions and billions of dollars worth of ammunition, missiles, surface-to-air missiles, all kinds of stuff that made that war happen. Then, of course, when the Soviets were defeated, we still had our fingers in the pie, and the ISI was basically directed by the CIA to create the Taliban. And the Taliban really was created by Pakistan. That's how they became a force to reckon with. And the idea was that they would be able to take over the government of Afghanistan, and the Pakistanis would then actually be the ones in control. And this all coupled with the dictator Musharraf removing the democratically elected government of Benazir Bhutto, and then later assassinating her like they did a few months ago. That all played into what the U.S. was directing. And all of this was for the benefit of the wealthy elite, the international global corporations that want the oil and the natural gas and all the natural resources in that part of the world. They had a plan to build a pipeline through Afghanistan, and the Taliban would not cooperate because they wanted more of the proceeds, since it was their resources that were being used. They didn't want their people to go begging while these big international corporations made hundreds of billions of dollars on somebody else's property. So when the Taliban balked at building the pipeline, the U.S. government sent some people over there and told them, look, you can either be, we can either pave your land with a carpet of gold or with a carpet of bombs. And that's the choice that they gave to Afghanistan. Well, Afghanistan rejected it, and then you had 9/11, which was a plan that was produced and operated by people within our very own government, and that was then used as a pretext to attack Afghanistan. And then guess what? They built the pipeline. Now the pipeline's in place, and these huge international corporations are making billions and billions of dollars off of it. So here we are. Brings us up to the day. Let's see. Now, I want to go to another site, and I'm going to kind of switch gears here, because what I want to talk about now is what actually happened on 9/11. There's a physicist by the name of David Ray Griffin, who was a longtime faculty member at Brigham Young University for decades. He was in the physics department there. In fact, he was the head of the physics department there up until recently when he retired. As I said, his name was David Ray Griffin. You can Google him on the internet and get information about what he's been saying. What he's done is he's taken samples from the dust and the debris of the wreckage of the towers, and he's analyzed it for its content using highly sophisticated testing. And he has some things to say about what he's found, and I'm going to play a little bit of that for you right now. And I'm going to play a little bit of that for you as soon as I get my stuff together here. Hold on for me. Here we go.
And none of those the stories hold up. In fact, the FBI put out a report to the Massawi trial in 2006 in which they contradicted virtually everything that the public has believed. For example, that Barbara Olson made a call.
Okay, well, I've got a little bit different subject matter up than I thought I had, but this is David Ray Griffin, but he's starting off with a different subject. So here we go again.
No, she didn't. This is to her husband Ted Olson. He claimed.
By the way, on the calls supposedly made from Barbara Olson to her husband, Ted Olson, who was in the U.S. government. I think he was a solicitor at that time. That call never happened. What David Ray Griffin is talking about here is that the FBI, in a report that was used in the trial of Massawi, the supposed 20th hijacker who was arrested before 9/11. The calls that Ted Olson said his wife made to him didn't happen. The FBI researched this, and they discovered that there was apparently an attempted call, but that it never got through. It lasted 0 seconds, according to the official FBI report, and it was never really made. Ted Olson was either duped by some fake call, or he's lying about having received calls from his wife, Barbara. Here, let's go back here and see if I can get this to play right here.
And none none of those the stories hold up. In fact, the FBI put out a report to the Massawi trial in 2006 in which they contradicted virtually everything that the public has believed. For example, that Barbara Olson made a call. They say, no, she didn't. This is to her husband, Ted Olson. He claims that she...
Wait a minute. Hold the phone. This is a great icon.
That voice you're hearing that came in is Charles Goyette. He is the host of the show, the radio program that I'm playing back to you from KFNX. And David Ray Griffin was his guest, and he's so the additional person you're hearing is Charles himself. And we continue.
Of the events of 9/11, the Barbara Olson call to Ted Olson, and the FBI says that she didn't?
That's right. They say that they do claim that she was on the plane and that she attempted a call, but that it was unconnected and therefore lasted only 0 seconds. And he claims that she called him twice, and each call lasted maybe a minute or so. So this is one of these things that should be a screening headline, because the FBI is part of the Department of Justice, and Ted Olson had at that time was the Solicitor General for the Department of Justice, and they're saying that what he told the American public isn't true. So that's one example of the fact that we don't have any evidence, every kind of evidence that you look at, that there were hijackers on the plane.
Well, that's funny, because those scoundrels at Popular Mechanics told me on the air on this station, I mean, we laughed at it, but they said, no, their DNA was recovered at the World Trade Center site. I mean, it was so preposterous. But yeah. This is what they were saying. This is what the Popular Mechanics magazine guy was saying.
Almost everything the Popular Mechanics people say is preposterous. So, for example, on that History Channel show that was put out a few months ago, one of them who himself, you know, claimed they claim they have all the scientific expertise. They have no degrees in this. But they're claiming, cell phone calls can be made at 40,000 feet, no problem. The FBI would not support the idea that any high-level cell phone calls from airliners were made. And see, that's what the 9/11 truth movement had been saying. These cell phones in 2001 didn't work from airliners above a few thousand feet.
It's just a little interlude. We're going to go back to the information here pretty soon. Let's see. Let me pull up another spot here for you. It talks about
come out of nowhere and just ream right into the side of the Twin Tower.
Okay, what you're going to listen to now is on the morning of 9/11, after the buildings were hit and collapsed, a news organization is out on the street, and they find this guy who's going to tell them about what happened. Now, I want you to listen carefully to this guy. You got to realize that people don't talk like this. What this guy says and the language that he uses is so clearly a plant that it's just almost ridiculous. So here we go.
Come out of nowhere and just ream right into the side of the Twin Tower, exploding through the other side. And then I witnessed both towers collapse, one first and then the second, mostly due to structural failure because the fire was just too intense.
Now listen to his voice. He sounds almost like he's reading this thing. What he's done is he's memorized what he's saying, and he's planted there. And then how exactly did the news people know to go to this guy? Well, apparently they had a meeting or something and got, you know, they knew who they were going to be interviewing. And they just went to this guy and took his statement.
Come out of nowhere and just reamed right into the side of the Twin Tower, exploding through the other side.
Okay, reamed right and exploding through the other side. I mean, just listen to that language. It's so contrived. Nobody talks like that in normal conversation.
Then I witnessed both towers collapse, one first and then the second, mostly due to structure.
Then I witnessed both. Who says that? Then I witnessed both towers collapse. I mean, it's just absurd. So here we go again.
Full failure because the fire was just too intense.
And how would he know that, you know, just standing down the street, how would he know this, that the buildings collapsed mostly due to structural failure because the fire was so intense? Who talks like that? Nobody does. So this guy is obviously a plant. Let's go on. Now, you know, you got to think about how this guy knew what he said.
Mostly due to structural failure because the fire was just too intense.
The firemen engineers didn't understand the collapse, but this bozo on the street did. Give me a break. Now, here's what else he said.
And then I witnessed both towers collapse.
He witnessed it collapsing?
Due to structural failure.
And how does he know that? Nobody talks this way.
One first and then the second, mostly due to structural failure because the fire was just too intense.
So I wonder why we've never been able to find out who this guy is. I would like to know who he is. It would be real interesting to get get the information about who he really is. And, you know, you look around behind him in this clip and you see that everybody's in shock. But he's out there giving this, you know, he sounds almost like an infomercial actor who just has got his part down and he's just spieling it out. So, you know, this is just so obvious. And
come out of nowhere and just ream right into the side of the Twin Tower, exploding through the other side. And then I witnessed both towers collapse, one first and then the second, mostly due to structural failure because the fire was just too intense.
Based on what you know, and I recognize we're dealing with sophie facts, is it possible that just a plane crash could have collapsed these buildings, or would it have required the sort of prior positioning of other explosives in the building? What do you think?
No,
example of somebody being used on the media to plant the false story of what really happened on 9/11.
One, the velocity false of the story. Plane and the fact that there were, you have a plane filled with fuel hitting that building that burned. The velocity of the plane certainly had an impact on the structure itself. And then the fact that it burned and you had that intense heat probably weakened the structure as well. And I think it was simply the planes hitting the buildings and causing the collapse.
Now, where did you get all this information from before any studies were done?
My sense is that just one, the velocity of the plane and the fact that there were, you have a plane filled with fuel hitting that building that burned, and you had that intense heat probably weakened the structure as well.
Well, that's just not even close to correct. The designers of the building 6 months before 9/11 had done an interview in which they said, the main designer said, that the buildings were designed to withstand the impact of several commercial airliners. The building would not be subject to destruction because of a plane crash into it. And by the way, the fuel in the aircraft was almost all burned up in the initial impact. That huge fireball that you probably remember seeing anytime you've watched the the video of the impact, that huge fireball is where most of the fuel was burnt up. Very little fuel was left to go into the building. And the fires in the building were far, far below the temperature required to melt or significantly deform steel. So the idea that the fires caused the buildings to collapse after the plane hit them is complete and utter hogwash.
As you can see, the impact on the rescue workers, I mean, these people who are heroes in this building, have been impacted by this. The number of people that have been injured, the number of police and fire officers, firefighters that have been injured is just, it's incalculable at this point.
Note the buzzwords, the rescue workers, the heroes, the policemen and firemen, the incalculable loss, the method of selling this lie is fully underway at this point. They're hitting all of the emotional buzzwords, and they're basically conditioning the TV viewer and the listener to swallow the lie that is the official conspiracy theory of 9/11. The most ridiculous of all conspiracy theories is the one that is presented to us by the media and by the government and by the 9/11 Commission. They so clearly have distorted and omitted so many facts and so much information in order to fool the public about what really happened on 9/11. For one thing, if you've read the 9/11 Commission report, you realize that they don't even mention the collapse of Building 7, which came down at 5:20 in the evening. A lot of people still don't know that Building 7 came down that day, but not until 5:20 in the evening. And there are lots of people who have now come forward saying that they witnessed a countdown to the demolition, and they were told in advance that the building was going to be demolished, and they were told to evacuate the area because the building was coming down. Now let me play a little bit more of what I've got on this video here.
Is it possible that just a plane crash could have collapsed these buildings, or would it have required the sort of positioning of other explosives in the building? What do you think?
No, my sense is that, in fact, that there were, you have a plane filled with fuel that burned. The velocity of the plane certainly had an impact on the structure itself.
Remember, the designers of the building said that the impact of a plane could not bring down the Trade Center towers. Now here's another little bit.
What perspective can you give us? I mean, there have been these repeated reports that, well, yes, Osama bin Laden, but some think he's been overemphasized as responsible for these kinds of events. I know many intelligence people at very high levels who say, listen, you can't have these kinds of attacks without having some state, Iraq, Iran, Libya, Syria, somebody involved. Put that into perspective for us.
Yeah, well, I'm not sure I agree that this is necessarily state-sponsored. It, as I mentioned earlier, certainly has the fingerprints of somebody like bin Laden.
So who is this guy, this so-called expert, who seems to think he knows so much about bin Laden and falling buildings, and is on the CBS on the morning of 9/11. Why is he on the air? He's there. His name is Jerome Hauer, and he's supposedly a biowarfare expert, a drug company director, and a Bush administration insider. So he gets to go on the air and spin what has happened. Now, there's a lot more to this. But here's the introduction that Dan Rather
gave. You served as the commissioner for Mayor Giuliani's Office of Emergency Management.
So, you hear that?
He is always poised to strike again. Immensely wealthy man and a very private man. He has been granted a safe haven by Afghanistan's ruling Taliban movement. And during his time in hiding, he has called for a holy war against...
They're talking about bin Laden here.
...the United States, and specifically for the killing of Americans and Jews. He is reported to be able to rally anywhere in the neighborhood of 3,000 fighters for his terrorist cause. He is suspected of helping set up an Islamic training center, in fact, several of them, to prepare soldiers.
Which, of course, he did with the aid of the United States covert operations.
To fight in all parts of the world, in particular against the United States.
Now, that was at 9:34 a.m. Eastern Time. That was 33 minutes after the second tower was hit.
He is always poised to strike again. Immensely wealthy man. And during his time in hiding...
So how do they know 33 minutes after the second tower is hit that bin Laden is responsible? Give me a break.
He's called for a holy war against the United States, and specifically for the killing of Americans and Jews. He is reported to be able to rally anywhere in the neighborhood of 3,000 fighters for his terrorist cause. He is suspected of helping set up an Islamic training center, in fact, several of them, to prepare soldiers to fight in all parts of the world, in particular against the United States.
So who wrote this elaborate story and got it on the air so quickly? Basically half an hour after the second plane hit.
He is very elusive, moving from mud huts and tent cities and caves at least three times a week, taking other precautions.
See, they're building the myth about bin Laden, who, by the way, was a CIA asset.
The U.S. Tried at one point in time with satellite surveillance to launch an attack on one of his camps, hoping he was there. It turned out he was not.
Mud huts, tent cities, caves, rich fanatics threaten the U.S. And suspend the laws of physics by causing steel buildings to collapse through with fire being the cause. Completely absurd. No steel building has ever collapsed due to fire. It never happened before 9/11, it hasn't happened since 9/11, and it did not happen on 9/11. The buildings weren't brought down by fire, they were brought down by controlled demolition. Moving along, we're going to come. We're going to look at some of the other stuff that happened in the media. This stuff didn't happen by itself. Somebody had to plan this stuff. Somebody had to put it together and have it ready to go on the morning.
And then I witnessed both towers collapse, one first and then the second, mostly due to structural failure because the fire was just too intense.
Just one, the velocity of the plane and the fact that there were, you have a plane filled with fuel hitting that building that burned and you had that intense heat probably weakened the structure as well. And I think it was simply the planes hitting the buildings.
Poised to strike again. Immensely wealthy man and a very private man.
That gives you the sense of what was happening there. Now here's a recording that was made on the street near the Trade Towers, and it caught the collapse of one of the towers. And in this recording, you can hear the explosions going off as the building comes down. Listen to this. Okay, back to the beginning of the recording. What you're hearing there are the multiple explosions of the charges that are placed in the building as it comes down. And on the screen, you can see the bands of explosions going around the building as it comes down. This was taken fairly close to the building. The camera was on some firemen, and as soon as it heard what was happening, the cameraman panned up and caught the building as it came down and caught this audio. Here it is. So, there you go. That's another, example of information that you've never seen on national television, on the mainstream media, because they don't want people to know this stuff. Because if people actually learned about it, it would blow their cover. So you're not going to see this stuff on TV. Now, I'm going to look here in my list for a couple of more things that are interesting that will help put the lie to what we've been told. This is a thing about 9/11 coincidences.
When I started looking through the 9/11 Commission report, I was outraged. Millions of Americans were looking to this report, this book.
This is Richard Heinberg, author of The Oil Depletion Protocol.
Tell them what actually happened on September 11th, 2001. And they were doing so under the assumption that there had been a clear, open inquiry into...
I'm going to start it over so you can hear it. Again, it just wasn't quite clear in the beginning.
When I started looking through the 9/11 Commission report, I was outraged. Millions of Americans were looking to this report, this book, to tell them what actually happened on September 11th.
If you want to look at this yourself, it's on YouTube. You can go to youtube.com and search for... Richard Heinberg. I can give you the information after the slash. It's youtube.com/watch?v=1x4TDOWP3PMNR=1. That's too much probably for you to look at, but again, if you go to YouTube and Google and search for 9/11 coincidences,
9/11 Commission report.
If you go and you search for 9/11 coincidences, you'll get this video, and it's part 10.
When I started looking through the 9/11 Commission report, I was outraged. Millions of Americans were looking to this report, this book, to tell them what actually happened on September.
This guy's name is Richard.
Millions of Americans
Heinberg.
Were looking to this
H-E-I-N-B-E-R-G, Richard Heinberg.
This book to tell them what actually happened on September 11th, 2001. And they were doing so under the assumption that there had been a clear, open inquiry into the events, that all of the relevant questions had been asked and evidence had been provided. And this clearly was not the case.
Okay, just want to remind you that this is Claudio's Speakeasy, the literary and all else. And you are listening to WCOM-LP, Chapel Hill and Carrboro. Claudio and I will be back next Tuesday with a special guest, Veda, who is a multidisciplinary artist. And it's going to be a very interesting show. And I hope everybody will join us next Tuesday at 10 a.m. when Claudio makes his triumphant return to Claudio's Speakeasy, the literary and all else. I just wanted to mention, if anybody's interested, I did a commentary on WCHL radio yesterday about the president and vice president, which I hesitate to call them that because they weren't really elected. They stole the elections both in 2000 and 2004, and they are, I am convinced, wanton criminals who really deserve to be in jail for the rest of their lives without parole. And that's what I said on my commentary on WCHL. If you go to 1360WCHL.com, you can click through and find a link to the commentary. It should be up on the website sometime today if you're interested in hearing it. They'll probably play the commentary again during the day a couple more times. It talks about how these people need to be arrested, prosecuted, convicted, and sentenced to life in prison without parole for their many crimes. Crimes against humanity, war crimes, lying to Congress, spying on Americans without warrants, mass murder, in that they've caused the death of well over a million people in Iraq and Afghanistan. These people need to be held accountable for what they've done. Back to 9/11 coincidences.
Well, the Keene report.
This is Michael Meacher, Member of Parliament, former UK Environment Minister. In other words, he was the British Minister of Environment under Tony Blair. And here is him. Here is Michael Meacher talking about 9/11.
On 9/11, which was finally set up, I think it's not a serious examination of what happened and what the court...
What he's talking about there is the 9/11 Commission.
I say that, first of all, because clearly the Bush administration didn't want to do it. They resisted all the calls for an official inquiry for several months. And what actually finally persuaded them to do this was not the politicians in Congress. It was the families, the wives of those who were killed at 9/11.
First thing it does is name the 19 hijackers.
This is back to Richard Heinberg again.
Saudi nationals. But, of course, we heard within days of the events that something like five or six of these people were still alive and well and living in the Middle East. Why wasn't this addressed in the 9/11 Commission report? Why wasn't there some inquiry as to who were the real hijackers if, in fact, the people who had been identified were clearly not the right people?
And on the day itself, which I think is the most significant evidence, the first plane hit at 8:46 a.m., the Southern Tower at about 9:05 a.m., the third plane hit the Pentagon at 9:38 a.m. They knew there was a hijack between 8:10 and 8:20 in the morning, let's say 8:15, so they knew half an hour before the first plane, three quarters of an hour before the second plane, and an hour and a half before the third plane hit their targets. And not once in that time did they scramble a warplane to intercept. Now, that is just staggering.
First, Bush tried to stop Congress from setting up its own 9/11 investigation.
It's important for us to not reveal how we collect information. That's what the enemy wants. And we're fighting an enemy.
When he couldn't stop Congress, he then tried to stop an independent 9/11 commission from being formed.
The president's position was a break from history. Independent investigations were launched within days of Pearl Harbor and President Kennedy's assassination.
But when Congress did complete its own investigation, the Bush White House censored 28 pages of the report.
The president is being pressed by all sides to declassify the report.
We have given extraordinary cooperation with Chairman Keene and Hamilton.
We haven't gotten the materials we needed, and we certainly haven't gotten them in a timely fashion. The deadlines we set have passed.
Will you testify before the commission?
This commission? You know, I don't testify. I mean, I'd be glad to visit with them.
The president named a supporter, Dr. Henry Kissinger, Secretary of State in the Nixon and Ford administrations, to head the panel.
He has a penchant for secrecy, which is not what's needed here. There are questions about his role in Vietnam, his role in the coup in Chile.
Several family members.
That was Jane Harman, who, by the way, is not a great paragon of virtue with regard to the covert operations of the U.S. government. She's part of the criminal cabal. But, of course, she has a political axe to grind, so that's why you hear her talking the way she does in this clip.
Members approached Kissinger and requested a meeting at his office in New York. Prior to the meeting, Kristen Breitweiser conducted a thorough investigation of Kissinger's potential conflicts of interest.
Kristen Breitweiser is a 9/11 widow. Her husband, I think, was killed in 9/11.
Probably much to the chagrin of some of the people in the room.
And this is Patty Kazaza, who lost her husband John on 9/11.
Lori asked some very pointed questions. Would you have any Saudi American clients that you would like to tell us about? And he was very uncomfortable, kind of twisting and turning on the couch. And then she asked whether he had any clients by the name of Bin Laden. And he just about fell off his couch.
Former Secretary of State Henry Kissinger stepped down from the position Friday.
We thought the meeting went well.
I wouldn't want to be in the way of some of these families. I mean, they're...
Kissinger was soon replaced by Tom Keene, a former New Jersey governor, and former Congressman Lee Hamilton, who had chaired the House Intelligence Committee.
It should be mentioned at this point that Keene actually had interest in the oil companies that were trying to get a pipeline built through Afghanistan. That alone should have disqualified him as a member of the 9/11 Commission. He had huge conflicts of interest. And, of course, the pipeline has since been built, so whatever interests he had have been richly rewarded. Also, remember that seven or so of the hijackers have been... shown to be alive, and some of them have even been interviewed by the BBC. So you got to remember that most of what you hear in this stuff is just complete and utter hogwash. So let's play a little bit more of this.
The president and vice president agreed to meet with the commission, but with a catch. They insisted on meeting together behind closed doors and not under oath.
Mr. President, why are you and the Vice President insisting on appearing together before the 9/11 Commission?
Because the 9/11 Commission wants to ask us questions. That's why we're meeting, and I look forward to meeting with them and answering their questions.
Man, that's lame.
Why are you appearing together rather than separately, which was their request?
That is so lame.
Because it's a good chance for both of us to answer questions that the 9/11 Commission is looking forward to asking us, and I'm looking...
And the tortured look on this guy's face is just amazing. It tells the whole story. Well, I'm going to sign off now. Thanks for listening, if you're out there. Next week, Claudia will be back. And in another couple of weeks, we're going to have Paul Nagy on with Touchstone, who's going to be our guest for the show. And we're going to have tons of fun talking with Paul. Next week we have Veda. On the 15th we have Peggy Taphorn, who is the artistic producing director at the Temple Theater. And I hope everybody has a wonderful day, a wonderful week, and I look forward to seeing you all on the radio next Tuesday.